Peace lovers, welcome back. I missed you guys so much. It's been a little minute. I took about a month and a half off from recording episodes. I just needed some time to create some other things and, think of some fresh ideas and think about what I wanted the show to look like for this second season. So, yeah, welcome to season two of Somewhere in Between. And I call it season two because it's a new season. We're literally changing seasons. I'm sitting on my porch and it's a bit brisk. I feel like I need a sweatshirt. It's that time of year, guys. And, my phone is going off, but I wanted to welcome you guys back to a new season of Somewhere in Between. I have been really thinking of different ways that I can challenge myself and make the show better for you. So this next season, you will have more of the In the Shop series where I interview people as I'm doing their hair, which is actually a part of today's episode. I'm so excited for you to hear. Oh my God, I'm so excited. And I also have a series of other bomb-ass melanated people that I'm interviewing and getting their perspectives of the different things that they do on a day-to-day basis, if it's a hobby or if it's a career, just people that are living their best lives and just investing their time and energies in amazing art or entrepreneurship or community work or just loving on themselves in different ways. So I'm so excited to introduce you to some of my other friends and people that I spend time with and doing that through different interviews. And then, of course, the Rolling with the Homie series where I just am talking shit with my friends. So I'm really excited to give you guys more of that this season. I have a new energy. I was feeling a little down last week and the week before because the summer is ending, and I don't know why I get a little depressed when the seasons change. But right now I feel so excited and pleased for the things in store for this fall, and I hope that I can bring you guys along with me as much as possible. So much to look forward to. So let me tell you what I have in store for you today for this interview. So if you are a history nerd like me, or just a person that appreciates trailblazers, I think you will really enjoy this interview. So this interview went on for a good time. So there'll be a part one, and then, I don't know, next week or maybe in a few days, I will release the next part of the interview because we talked for a while. But I cannot tell you. So, like, okay. Okay, so you know how it goes. When we retell history, we normally tell our history from the perspective of those that are in power, right? So when we speak about our trailblazers in melanated history, especially here in America, you hear about a lot of the same stories. So no disrespect, but you hear the same names mentioned over and over again. And most of the time, it's because those people were aligned with high-profile interest. And it worked out that way, you know. So, and again, with respect, we'll take Rosa Parks as an example of that. Rosa Parks, yes, definitely deserves all of our respect, but also she was aligned with the right folks. She had the right background and she had the right look. So it worked out for her. But there are so many other people like Claudette Colburn and the person that I'm going to be interviewing today that have contributed to the significant process that melanated people have been able to make in this country. And maybe their names are not as popular and you don't know them, you know, as easily. They don't have the household name that that other trailblazers have, but that does not make them any less important. And a lot of times those people have done such amazing work at such length that it's really disappointing that you don't know about everything that they've contributed to. So The other day, I was speaking with a friend, and I was telling them that about this amazing woman whose hair I do, and she's 90 years old, and just about some of her contributions that she's made, like amazing contributions that she's made. And my friend was like, "Yo, you should get her autograph." And I was like, "Yeah, I should get her autograph." And then I was thinking, "Dummy, you should record her the next time you do her hair, because she always tells me her stories. Dr. Farley is always telling me her stories and different things about her life, and she wants to share her stories because she knows that the only way that we can protect our history is by getting it down in audio and visual and written format. So grab your freaking recorder and record your next conversation." So that's what I did, and I was very pleased that she agreed to allow me to just record us while I did her hair the other day. Guys, you have to go to my Instagram. So I know that you probably follow my Somewhere with Fancy Instagram, but my work Instagram, Fancy Locks, FancyIelocs, no underscores, no spaces, just Fancy Locks. Go to my Instagram and look at her hair. She has snow white hair, and it's past her waist. It's amazing. So let me give you some background on who this amazing woman is and why this interview is so important, okay? So Dr. Florence Farley was born May 28, 1928. Of course, she's a Gemini. You guys know I love Geminis. Born May 28 in Roanoke, Virginia. She went to, it was Virginia State College, of course, now it's Virginia State University, and she graduated with her master's in psychology in 1954. She was commissioned to the United States Army, the United States Women's Army Corps, and she was a second lieutenant, and she became the first African American female officer at Fort Lee. She went on to serve as the chief psychologist at Central State Hospital in Petersburg when it w and was the first African American clinically licensed examinator in the state of Virginia. So you hear how many times I'm saying first. She was the first. She was the first. Okay, and I'm not even done yet. She joined the faculty at Virginia State, where she taught graduate and undergraduate students for over 40 years, and also served as the chair of the Department of Psychology. Dr. Farley obtained her PhD in psychology in 1977 from Kent State University in Ohio. Dr. Farley also, she began her political career in 1973 when she became the first woman elected to Petersburg City Council, and became the first member of Virginia's first majority black city council. I'm sorry I messed that up, but I'm saying first a lot, so you kind of understand, okay? Dr. Farley won her re-election campaign in 1978 and in 1982, and in 1984, she became the first female mayor of Petersburg and the first African American woman to become mayor in any city in Virginia. So she's a big fucking deal. I mean, like, I don't know if you just heard how long it took me to read her accomplishments, but that's a lot. So when you listen to this interview and you hear how amazingly chill she is, you will kind of understand why not only am I in awe of her accomplishments, but also I just really love spending time with her. I really love just listening to her talk, and I can't believe that someone that is as educated and traveled and experienced and knowledgeable about so many things would be so interested to hear my opinion on things. And what I want to do and what I've been up to is really crazy. Like, sometimes I really have to remind myself of which reality I'm in. It's really amazing. It's a beautiful life. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode. I am so excited that this is the first episode of season 2 that I get to welcome you back with. And I have so much fun things, so many fun things in store for you for season 2. Also, I hope to be getting the visual component up and moving pretty soon. So be on the lookout for that. I'll be doing product reviews on YouTube. I'll also just be doing reviews on whatever the fuck I want on YouTube. And I'll bring my friends along for the ride. So yeah, let's get to this episode. Guys, please like and share. If you know somebody that might want to hear me talk to them, whisper in their ear, send them the show, okay? And tell them to follow me on Instagram. And as always, you follow me on Instagram. And oh, I almost forgot. We can't start season 2 without taking a cleansing breath. So on the count of 3, let's just take a nice full inhale, and I want you to fill your lungs with energy and positivity and love. And I want you to exhale drama, negativity, and self-doubt. One more time. Inhale a deep, full breath, and make your belly rise with air and possibility. And exhale, drawing your navel into your spine and pushing out any old baggage that you have. Okay, that's much better. So let's get to the show. Thanks so much for listening, guys, and stick around until the very end. Okay, Dr. Farley, you were reminding me of the story of when you initially decided to go natural.
Yes. My sister, I have a sister who lived in Newark, New Jersey, mm-hmm. and we always went to Broadway when I would go to New York. Okay, go to New Jersey, and we go to New York, and so we would always go to Broadway. And so we went in and saw this show, and at intermission, at the end of the, right before intermission, and these women were on stage, and their hair was natural. It wasn't in my vocabulary then, okay. So, but the hair was just beautiful, huh?
What year was this?
Oh, this must have been 1967 or 68, maybe somewhere around there, I think.
Okay.
Their hair was just gorgeous. And so I went backstage at intermission, and I asked them about their hair, and I caught a lady, she was going into her dressing room again, and I said, tell me, how did you get your hair like that? Mm-hmm. And she said, it's natural. So then I saw, and I didn't know what that meant, and she brushed me off and went on about her business. And then I saw another lady, and I ran up to her, and I said, tell me, how did you get your hair like that? Mm-hmm. And so she says, it's natural. It's just natural. It's just natural. I said, what is she saying? What is she talking about? You know. So I went back. It's time. Okay, intermission is over. I'm going back to my seat. I told my sister. I said, they said it's natural. I said, what are they talking about? So at the end of the show, still didn't know. I'm still going to find out. Okay. So I go back backstage at the end of the show. I ask another woman, and she looked at me and she says, it's natural. Just wash your hair and let it be natural. And that's as much, that's as close as I got to a description of what this hair was all about.
Okay.
So we left New York and went to California for the rest of the summer. Okay. And I had a sister. I have a sister in California.
Okay, so you
visited. So I went back to this is another sister. This is the sister who was like my big mama to me.
Okay.
And so we went to California, my older sister and I. We went to California. got to California. And, of course, I had niece lived in Oakland.
Okay.
So I went to Oakland, California. We walk in the streets. All of a sudden, I saw these ladies, and they had their hair like these ladies had it on Broadway.
Okay.
So I just went up to the lady, and I said, tell me, how did you get your hair like that? She said, you just wash it, and you dry it, and you oil it, and you just let it, if you want to, you cut it. If you don't want to, you just let it be what it is.
Okay.
I said, what?
What do you mean? She said,
you just wash it, and you do this, and you oil it if you want to, and you just let it. I said, well, is it anybody here who can do mine like that? She said, yes, go to the beauty parlor. They do it in the beauty parlor. And I said, really? She said, yeah. So I take myself, had a perm. I had one of the first perms that you could have.
Okay.
I've always been messing with my hair. So, okay, I go to the beauty parlor. She said, we can start it. And I said, well, how do you start it? She said, cut your hair off. Cut all of it off. I said, cut it all off?
She said, yes. How long was your hair at that point?
It was to my shoulders.
Okay. So you had good length.
And I had, It was to my, It was at least to my shoulders because I used to clip it, you know, every month.
Okay.
And I had one of the first perms in Petersburg.
Okay.
My beautician was Mary Harris. She had a shop, La Rose. And she was a very active person in civil rights. But she, I saw in the magazine that they had this perm that black people could use.
Okay.
So I tell her about it. And she's as you know, as adventurous as I am. So she orders it. So she she gives me, her shop was on Halifax Street then.
Okay.
And she gives me this perm. It lit my whole head up. I pushed her away from me. I ran up Halifax Street. I had to I had to get me some air.
Wait, was that her first time, like,
yes, it was the first time
hair?
She ever, yes.
Oh, wow.
This is the first time. I was the first person in Petersburg to get a perm.
What year was that? What year did she get the perm? So before that, you were straightening your hair, is that right?
Yeah, okay. And she was my beautician.
Okay.
And I went every 2 weeks.
Okay.
Every Thursday night.
So
I got
your
off
hair.
Work.
Wow.
And every 2 weeks. And so she was my beautician. And at that time, she was pressing it. And then I found out that you could get this. Who was that woman? It's going to come to me. Because the name, the brand,
mm-hmm.
that put it out. And she put out they put out the first perm for a black woman. And I got it. And Miss Harris gave it to her. She had a beauty school.
Okay.
And La Rose Beauty School. She taught a whole lot of the people who are beauticians now, older ones. She tried it, but she always told the people about her first experience with the perm and how she had to run up Halifax Street to catch me because I was gone. She said I didn't know where I was going, but all I knew was I had to have some air to my head.
Amazing you didn't lose your hair. Like running up the street like that with that chemical in your hair. Like, you gotta wash that stuff out.
And then she, after she washed it out, it still was burning. I read the autobiography of Malcolm X.
Yes.
And you remember he put his hand in the door.
Yes.
I thought about that.
I thought about when you were thinking about you running up Halifax Street.
When I ran up Halifax Street, I said, Malcolm put his head in the door when I ran up Halifax Street.
Man.
To try to get some air to my head because my head was on fire.
Man.
Do you know I didn't get not one sore?
Really?
Mm-mm. Then I had the nerve after I left the beauty parlor. She kind of calmed my head down a little bit. You know, I went home and put some Noxzema.
Oh, no. You really irritated your scalp that day.
I mean, I was, Oh God, I never will forget that experience.
Well, let me ask you this though: was your hair pretty?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty. It was pretty. It was slick. It was slick, but it was pretty. It did what it was supposed to do. It sure did.
So how long did you continue to get relaxers?
Not, well, they improved on them.
Okay.
And it got to the place where it was not that kind of burning. You know, I never went back to got that brand. I wish that it'll come to me by tonight when I'm thinking about this. But anyway, they finally came out with something much milder and kind of different. It was not a relaxer, it was something else.
Okay.
And I did that. But I guess I must have done it maybe about 2 years or so.
Okay.
And then I went, you know, into the natural, and when I did that, going back to the when I was in Oakland shopping for a natural, the woman told me, she said, you would have to cut all your hair off and then start it all over again.
Okay,
and
did you do
so
it?
I said, well, I know I didn't shape my head, but I let her cut it way down.
Okay,
and so the back was natural.
Okay,
and the front was straight.
Okay.
So there I was with the front of my head straight.
That's weird.
And the back natural.
Yeah, that couldn't have been great.
Well, it was okay because I did what I wanted to do.
Gotcha.
And I was not, I mean, you know, I'm not a fashion kind of person, you know.
You're very stylish. You're always very stylish.
I'm stylish, but I'm not, it's a little twist to that style, my stylish.
You're not like,
you know.
You don't seem to be trendy. You just seem to have your own style.
No, I'm basically, I'm basic kind of thing. So, I knew what I was trying to accomplish. I've always known whatever it was in life that I was trying to accomplish, I could concentrate on and get to my end result. And I didn't care what others thought. So, therefore, I could wear the front of my hair slick. And the back of it, kinky, if you want to call it that. And it was all right with me. See, so I wasn't trying to start a style or what have you. I was just trying to do my own hair, what I wanted to do with it.
Gotcha.
And so I've always kind of been self-centered.
Okay.
And I don't go with the crowd. The crowd does what it wants to do. I do what I want to do. And if we don't blend, this all right. If we do blend, we have fun. Okay, and that's life, you know. So anyway, I came back to Petersburg with half my hair straight, the front straight, and the back natural. And of course, I continued to cut the back, you know, and I cut the front, started cutting the front, but that perm just stayed. Like I said, I'm not going anywhere.
Okay.
She's not getting rid of me. And I didn't want to shave my head, you know. So anyway, so I was on campus, and I can remember some of my, most of my friends on campus were older than I. And they said, Florence, what are you doing with your hair? I said, what I want to, girl, leave me alone. And they was laughing. They said, but it looks funny. And I said, I know it does, but it's okay. And so
I'm doing something. Leave me alone.
Yeah, leave me alone. So then I said, wait a minute. I called that beautician in California. And I said, don't they have wigs? Afro wigs. She said, yes. I said, well, where can I get an Afro wig? Because I'm tired of people asking me about my hair. And so she told me, and she said, I can put an order in. And I said, okay, I'll get my niece to come by there, you know, and pay for it and get it. And anyway, she sent me the wig.
Nice, okay.
So I put on this Afro wig.
Okay.
I ain't like it. I paid my money for that wig, and I mean, I paid a pretty, pretty penny for that
wig. After all of that, do you remember how much you paid for it?
I can't remember right now. I think about it a little bit. But anyway, all I know was for that day, it was a pretty penny.
Right, okay.
And there I was buying me an Afro wig. And I think I have, I'm going to look through some pictures because I think I have a picture of myself
with this
Afro wig on.
I would love to see
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
yeah. That would make me so happy.
I got to resurrect that picture. I'm going to find it. So anyway.
Well, did you wear it often?
No.
Okay.
Because after I saw how ugly it was, I said no. So
this
I just
does not look natural.
Uh-uh. And I started calling my hair two-tone.
Okay.
Uh-huh. I said my two-tone hairstyle. That's what I called it.
Okay.
My two-tone hairstyle.
You had a party
and
in the
so
bathroom.
Basically, it was an evolution. You know, I had to work through it.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided I would work through it.
Nice.
That I would get my hair natural. And so I went from a perm in front to a afro in the back. And I think it said something. I think it says something. It said something to me, and that was that I am comfortable in my own skin.
Yes.
You know.
Yes. Comfortable enough to do something very different.
Yeah, I do. But it did what I wanted to do, and it's my body. I'm in touch with it. It's my hair,
mm-hmm.
and I do what I want to with my hair.
Nobody
dictates it. Society doesn't do it. My mama didn't do it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I did it. And so that was it. It was all right with me. And I've never looked back. I have never looked back.
That is sweet.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I've been wearing my hair natural. I stopped processing my hair. I guess it must have been since 1968.
Wow.
And when I was on council, I would get notes from black women in Petersburg telling me that it would be all right to use a warm comb on my hair. I need to find all those notes too. See, I have some fundamental things
comb.
For a book, huh?
Not
a warm comb,
comb
not
a
hot
comb.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they didn't want to offend me.
Well,
so they're going to let the comb be warm.
The suggestion is offensive enough. Okay, so what was your transition? How long did you wear your afro before you transitioned to locks? And what was that like?
When I, wore my hair natural all those years, always. The kids, you know, come to college and they would say, that's the head of the psych department and look at her hair. You know, they couldn't understand that. One of their teachers, you know, wearing that. And so then they got used to it, and then they decided they wanted theirs like it, too.
That's right.
So I had a number of students who started wearing naturals because of me. Then, I mean, this is years later. This is in the 80s, you know?
Okay.
When they kind of stopped wearing the hair natural and started processing it and all.
Hold on 1 second for me, Dr. Father. Hey. Hey, I'm going to call you right back. I'm with a client, okay? Okay. No, I didn't. I'm sorry. I started working. Yeah, you can be in my chair. As a matter of fact, come on by. I'd like you to meet Dr. Farley. Just come by after your meeting. Okay. Yep. All right, peace. My friend and I went to a spa yesterday and our hair got wet.
Mm.
And you know, it's a whole traumatic thing behind it. But anyway, I'm sorry. I want
to
hear more.
She went to what?
We went to a spa yesterday. We went to a Korean spa yesterday.
Oh.
It was amazing.
Mm.
I got scrubbed. This woman scrubbed my body.
Oh.
I mean, she scrubbed my naked body. It was very intense.
Where was that?
It's in Fairfax. So you go there and they have like 7 different pools. They have different temperatures. Like they're as hot as 115 degrees, and then there's one that's only 55 degrees for different therapies. And they massage your shoulders, your back, your legs. Then you get your body scrub. Then you go to these poultice rooms where you sit in like this room that's filled with pink Himalayan salt.
With what?
Pink Himalayan salt.
Okay.
Then there's another one that's filled with amethyst stones and black onyx stones and blue onyx stones and red clay pebbles. And it was crazy, but our hair got wet. And my friend was just calling to see if I could do her hair today because she said she has an afro under her locks. So,
oh, okay.
But I think you would enjoy her.
Okay.
She graduated from Virginia State also. She has a doctorate and just really, really cool person. But she'll probably be around here later on. But anyway, I want to hear more. So we were at Virginia
State.
So
we're moving from a natural bush. What do we call it? I can't even remember. But anyway, I think we just called it a natural.
Okay.
And went from there to Lox. Well, it was like, I decided I wanted the twist.
Okay.
I saw somebody and I decided, hey, look, I need to have the twist. I need my hair twisted. Mm-hmm. So I have a friend in Roanoke. I went to Roanoke and he was having a fashion show.
Okay.
So he said, I'd like to do your hair. And he said, I need someone with gray hair.
Okay.
And in my fashion show. So I said, well, you can do it if you twist it.
So I'm sorry. So, give me an idea of how old you were in the 80s and how long you've had this beautiful silver hair.
I don't know when my hair turned.
Okay.
But this was in the 90s.
This was in the
90s. Okay, yeah, this was in the 90s, yeah.
And by this point, you were already on city council? And
oh, I had finished city council.
Okay, all right. You were already mayor at this point.
Married?
Mayor.
Yeah. Oh, I had been the mayor.
Okay.
I had been the mayor. And then I decided, so then I, when I got lost, because this was close to when I retired.
Okay.
So this was at the end of the 90s. Because I retired in 2003.
Okay.
And I had locks what did I have in 2003? I had locks. I had started locking my hair.
Okay.
Because, no, I hadn't. I had, now I know, I had twists.
Okay.
That's right, I had twists when I, and all. So when I went to Roanoke, and he wanted to do this fashion show, and he wanted to put me in the fashion show, and I told him if, you know, he could twist my hair, then I would do it. But if he couldn't twist it, I wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. So he had a friend who was going to be in the show, and he was from Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
And this guy could twist.
Okay.
He knew how to twist the hair. Okay. And so he was the first guy to twist my hair.
Okay.
And so,
when you say twist, do you mean comb twist, or do you mean like two pieces twisted together?
Twisted.
Okay, like a two-strand twist together.
Yeah, like a two-strand twist.
Okay, cool.
So he did the two-strand twist, and I loved it to death.
Okay.
And I said, oh, this is it. I'm not doing anything else to my hair. I finally found what my hair is supposed to be.
Okay, sweet.
Gone through all of this, you know, through all these transitions. Yeah. So anyway, I got the two-strand twist. Okay. And I thought that was going to be the end of me and hair.
Okay.
So then after I got the two-strand twist, I said, you know what? I really and truly want locks.
Mm.
And I need to do locks.
So who had you seen with locks at this point? Like, what helped you come to that decision?
I saw, you know, that nice big fat book on hairstyle. I know you must have it. And it goes back to Africa and the history of locks and all of that.
Oh, yes. Are you talking about the book that Toni Morrison wrote the foreword for?
Mm-mm. I don't know.
There's a book a lot like that where Toni Morrison wrote the foreword. And she talked about her starting her own locks and...
I'm not sure. I haven't read... I'm not sure of the foreword.
Okay.
But this is a big book like that on locks.
Mm-hmm.
And they go back to the whole history of them.
I think we're talking about the
same book. Okay. Mm-hmm. I think I may have, I saw this boy, guy, and that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And because that's the way I got turned on to the book.
Okay.
And I saw this guy, and I've always thought that male hair was pretty, mm-hmm. more beautiful than our hair. Mm-hmm. And when we had naturals, I can remember the summer I was at Harvard, and these guys had these naturals, and it was right in the height of the civil rights movement. Mm.
I thought they looked like lions.
They were the most beautiful hair I'd ever seen. I said, now all the people and hair in the world, mm-hmm. the most beautiful hair is a black man's hair. Mm-hmm. In a natural state. Mm-hmm. And I just thought their naturals were the prettiest thing. And I saw this little guy and he had locks.
Okay.
And I stopped him and asked him about his hair. And he told me. And I said, that's what I want to do to my hair.
Okay. I see a pattern with you.
And so there I was. You know, and so I got my hair locked.
Okay.
I started locking, and so I couldn't find anybody to do these two-strand twists, but some of the African women, mm-hmm. where were they? They were on, I don't know what street they were on. But they used a gel, mm-hmm. and it was red. Okay. And there I was with the white hair and the black hair and the red hair.
Oh.
Not like yours. Not pretty like yours. I'm talking about.
Because I got some black hair and some white hair and some red hair.
Yeah, but I know. But look how pretty yours is. Because these are even. See what I mean? They just had that to lock, you know, to twist it. They put that gel on there.
Yeah.
And there that nasty gel was all up in my black and white hair.
Oh, man.
And I said, I have to do better. Found a place in Maryland. I would go to visit my sister and get my hair done.
Okay.
It was in a mall, and it was some guys, and they locked my hair. And okay. I would go to Maryland every 6 weeks
okay.
to get my hair done.
Okay.
So, I get on school board, and I remember I was getting ready to retire. Maybe I did retire that summer, 2003. And we were at the opening conference for the public schools opening. Mm-hmm. And I saw a girl, and she had locks. And I went to her and asked her who took care of her locks.
Okay.
And that's when she gave me two names, a woman on Washington Street and Shirley.
Okay.
And that's when I met Shirley.
Okay.
And so Shirley's been doing my hair ever since 2003. She's been taking care of my locks ever since then. And then I came to you, so you're the only two people who've ever put their hands on my head.
I feel so privileged.
Mm-hmm. No, wait, anyway.
No, so seriously, I really do.
Well, I asked Shirley, I said, she doesn't want anybody to touch my hair. Mm-hmm. So I said, Shirley, I said, it's hard on her to come and pick me up and take me up to Midlothian, do my hair and bring me back. Because we used to hang out together afterwards, you know, eat dinner, make a day of it. But anyway, she gives up her a Monday and do that for me.
Okay.
And she's been doing it since she moved up to Chesterfield. And so she told me, said she'd let, you could take care, you could do it.
Miss Shirley.
Yep. She did. I said, okay. No, I don't want any, huh?
She told me well.
Yeah. don't you let anybody touch your head. I said, I don't want anybody to touch it either. I didn't know you did this to my hair last time.
I did, yeah. We rope twisted it, and then we put it in braids. Because the first time, we did not rope twist it.
Yes, you did. You did one. Real big one.
Oh, we did one braid, but remember we didn't do all the tiny
what
twists.
You doing now?
I'm just taking them loose now.
I know, but did you do that last time?
I did.
I don't remember. Okay. It knows as I am. I don't remember that.
Yeah, because remember it took a while, and what's his name? I forgot his name.
Who, Mike?
Yeah. He kept coming back, him and his niece. But okay. So you were tell me more. I always like to hear when you tell me about the other people's reactions to you and your hair and your viewpoints. That's always the most entertaining.
People think I don't think people like me too much. But I love them. I love them because they make my life rich.
Because
they bring another point of view. See, so I that's the way I take it, you know.
Yeah.
And then I can deal with it. I don't think they're being malicious, and I don't think that they're being. They just don't know me.
Yeah.
You know, and so I just kind of go along and have to kind of laugh at it. And I think it's interesting, as I said, just like the lady who came up to me. It's not going to ever end. I realize that now. That it's not going to ever end, that people don't try, look at my difference, whatever it is, and it's different from theirs or different from the norm, and then they want to know how I do it. I said, well, it's so different, and I think maybe crazy or wild or whatever else you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
I said, so why you want to know about it?
Yeah, I don't get that.
I said, why you want to know about it? Because you're not going to do it.
Right.
So why are you butting into that?
You know what's funny to me? I had a conversation with someone recently, and we have a difference of opinion in several different matters.
Yeah.
But my viewpoint is that my opinion is my opinion. It's not necessarily fact. It's just my opinion, and
that's
your
right.
opinion is your opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about me is that I don't have to understand another person's motives for me to respect their perspective. So let's say we're talking about, I'm going to use a dumb example, and I'll say, I like the color red and you like the color blue.
Mm-hmm.
And you think that if I like the color blue, you just can't understand why I would ever like the color red. My thing is why do you have to understand why I
like
the color red?
Well, see, this is the interesting thing to me is and the reason for me, take what you're saying, but and then add it to the fact that I took my first course in psychology when I was 17 years old.
Okay.
So I grew up with my profession.
Mm.
So my thoughts and ideas, I was shaped by my profession. Once I got into my field and recognized what it was to me and for me, then it became the way I viewed my world. It became me. It is I. You know what I mean? The whole kind of concept. So, the one thing that I know about human behavior is that motivation, what pushes an individual, is very complex, it's multidimensional, blah, 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 okay? Therefore, I don't go around trying to find out why. Because the whys are on the surface.
Exactly.
And I don't have, and I'm not going down underneath it.
Right.
I'm not going down underneath it. So I don't have to know why you do what you do.
Right.
All I know is that what you do and the effect that it has.
Right.
Is what I can deal with.
Why do those people have to live like that? Why
but
do they...
But we are reared that way. We make people think that we know why you do something. It's not their business, number one. Okay? It's not their business. They don't need to go into that.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever they come up with is wrong. So that's what I tell them. And that's what I try to teach teachers. I used to try to teach teachers that, and they finally understood it. They'll tell me, all right, one child... and another child, two children, all right. He smacked him and he wanted to hurt him.
Mm-hmm.
I said, would you please tell me what you saw and what you heard?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want your interpretation of it.
Tell me the actual fact.
Yeah, no. Tell me what you saw and what you heard.
Because they're not facts. They're what you saw and what you heard.
That's right.
Perspective.
No. Understood. It's your interpretation.
Understood.
And I don't want your interpretation. Mm-hmm. I want to know what happened.
Mm-hmm. Report the news. Don't report the news. Don't report your opinion.
That's right. Get that. So I had my students to observe children. And they could only give what they saw and what they heard.
Okay.
Not what they thought.
Okay.
Not what they believed.
Okay.
Not what they interpreted. All of that is subjective. Mm-hmm. And if you are a teacher, you don't want to deal with you. You want to deal with the incident. Mm-hmm. And the only way you can deal with the incident is to record what happened. So they had to... I had them to do two observations. Mm-hmm. And the first part of it was what I saw and what I heard.
We can use a lot more.
Okay. And then at the end, then the second part was what I think it meant.
Okay.
And recognizing that what you thought it meant is different from what I thought it meant. Mm-hmm. Could be. Mm-hmm. And so that was try to get them to understand and to differentiate between subjectivity and objectivity.
I love that. Okay.
And, you know, it was just a fist fight with all those students that I taught over the years doing that. Mm-hmm. Because this was not something that they had to do in other classes.
Understand.
Because they could sit up and just talk about, and yeah, I saw him when he smacked her. That's an interpretation. Mm-hmm. All you saw was that when he lifted his hand and brought his hand to her face. Mm-hmm. That's what you saw. Mm-hmm. Now, whether it was a smack or a blow or what, all that, that's interpretation.
Right.
And so that's what I used to dwell on, trying to help them to understand that, because I knew if they worked with children, that they needed not to spend all their time with their interpretation. Mm-hmm. And a child can grow when you are interpreting what they're doing, right, rather than trying to see exactly what are they doing.
Because you're literally putting your perspective on this person not even a fully formed person yet.
Yeah, that's right.
So
that's
your opinion is shaping their opinion of themselves.
There you go. You got it. My hair is beautiful.
Your hair is beautiful.
Look at that. It is.
It's down past your waist. And what's so funny is that it's curly right now, so after we wash it, it's going to be even
straight, longer.
Yeah.
Okay,
so since we're recording, I know you told me this story already, but mm-hmm. tell me more about your childhood and the early parts of your career.
Oh, that's really two different big things.
Okay, well, one at a time.
Now, what is it? My childhood?
Yeah, tell me about your childhood.
Like what?
Like, I know you are the ninth child.
Okay, I'm the ninth child. Mm-hmm.
Tell me about your parents and where you grew up.
Oh, I grew up in Roanoke, Virginia. And Roanoke is very different from Petersburg.
Okay.
And now I understand it more than I ever did. I recognize that how different we were. And I tell you this story. When I got married, okay, and married a Petersburger, mm-hmm. and Thanksgiving came around, first Thanksgiving we were married, had our own house and all. We decided we're going to have Thanksgiving dinner. All right. My husband's very traditional, mm-hmm. and he was a cook, ran a restaurant, and of course I didn't cook, but I knew what I wanted to eat or didn't want to eat,
and of course, like me.
I demanded that I have what I wanted to eat, and I wanted to eat mostly what my mother had cooked for me, and cooked the way my mother cooked it.
Okay.
So okay, they're getting married in October. First holiday is the Thanksgiving. As I said before, it's centered around food, and he's a cook, and so naturally that centers around it. Mm-hmm. So we start planning the menu. And we started disagreeing about this menu. And the thing I remember so vividly, two things. I said, well, we'll have corn pudding. Mm-hmm. And he said, corn pudding? And I said, yes, corn pudding. And he said, oh, what is corn pudding? And I said, corn pudding is corn pudding, fool. Oh.
Why are you asking me such questions?
And I said, you always have corn pudding at Thanksgiving, and you also have it at Christmas dinner.
Okay.
So he said, you don't eat corn in the winter.
Oh.
And I said, oh, you don't? He said, no. I said, well, when do you eat corn? He said, you eat fresh corn. And you eat corn, therefore you eat corn in the summer.
Okay.
And you eat corn on the cob, fresh, and you cut it off the cob, and you fry it.
Mm-hmm.
I said, who ever heard of any fried corn? He said, well, that's the way you fix corn. Who's ever heard of corn pudding? So here we are, one of the first big arguments we have of the marriage is old Thanksgiving dinner, particularly over corn pudding. Okay, and corn.
And corn.
So you don't have corn for Thanksgiving. Okay. And when you eat corn, it's on the cob or either it's fried.
Okay.
No, you don't fry corn. You stew corn. And you eat corn on the cob. That's the only common use of corn.
Okay.
Okay. So then the next item on the menu is dressing.
Okay.
So you have cornmeal dressing. I said, no, you don't have any cornmeal. Don't make dressing out of cornmeal. You make dressing out of stale bread.
Now, you know,
regular bread.
I'm a girl that's not crazy about cooking also, but it seems like you had a lot of opinions about what was going to be made for somebody that wasn't going to cook anything.
Well, because my mother did what we wanted to do.
Okay, so you were used to having a lot of input.
So my mother cooked, but we did have input.
Okay.
I told you. See, my mother had two sets of children. She had my older brothers and sisters, then she had the two girls, mm-hmm. and then my niece.
Okay.
And she reared my niece as a sister.
Okay.
So she was at home, and therefore my mother was free-spirited too, and she did what she wanted to do, but she had these two different families. And so by the time I came along, you could express your opinion. You could do what you could talk to her.
Okay.
And you communicated. Because my dad, I told you, was in Pittsburgh, and she didn't have anything but us.
Okay, got it.
In the house. My brothers and sisters out in their homes and working in different places in the country, you know, and all. So I grew up like my mama's big sister in a way.
Okay.
Because she and I talked about everything. And so that's the reason I had so much opinion about food.
Okay.
Because she was a good cook then.
Okay.
And so I was going to have that meal just like my mama did. And boy, we argued. So corn and dressing.
Okay.
And so I said, well, I tell you what. You stay down here with your mama and have all your good food. And I'm going home to my mama and have all my good food in Roanoke.
Okay.
He said, well, we can do it another way. And I said, well, how is that? I'll cook both ways.
Oh, compromise.
And so I said, okay. And that's what he did. And he was a compromiser.
That's really sweet.
Uh-huh. So he did. And I stayed down here the first Thanksgiving.
That is
but
so
I went
sweet.
Home. I went home for Christmas. I said, okay. I'm not going through this again. I said, I'm going home to my mama for Christmas. And I went home and had my real Christmas dinner.
Your real Christmas.
Uh-huh.
Not
and
fake
and
Christmas
so
you have
I learned to like, you know, his stuff. I didn't cook, so he didn't get to, when he would go home with me to Roanoke, he loved my mother's cooking.
Okay.
And he loved not having to cook it, you know, because I was cooking for him. So anyway, that was one of the, that's when I started recognizing that we were black. We were doing basic things like cooking, but it wasn't the same.
Okay.
And that's when I really got the impact of differences.
Okay.
From Petersburg and Roanoke.
Okay. So close. You wouldn't think it would be like huge cultural differences.
No,
like
but we were so different.
Okay.
And the way we grew up was so different from Petersburg.
Mm-hmm.
Even to school, Herman Fauntleroy and I, when we became friends, and he started telling me about his experiences in school,
mm-hmm.
and how the whites had books, and at when they got a new set of books, the old set of books came to Peabody.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know anything about that.
Okay.
Roanoke was segregated like Petersburg was segregated. Jim Crow laws were in Roanoke,
mm-hmm.
just like they were in Petersburg. But Al, Jim Crow was Jim Crow. It was not steeped in slavery.
Because
Roanoke didn't exist during the Civil War.
Got it.
Petersburg was the center, in a way, of the Civil War.
So it's so deeply entrenched here.
It's part of it. It plays a part in everything. So attitudes and feelings are so different in the people, black and white,
yeah.
in Petersburg and Roanoke. So the Civil Rights Movement in Roanoke, I would call it nearly peaceful.
Wow.
And
I never considered it that way.
Yeah, and in Civil Rights Movement here, we had to struggle and fight for everything.
Because this is the origin of racism.
This is it. This is where it all happened. And so I didn't understand this until years and years and years later.
Mm.
But it was so different. So,
wow.
And plus, I always attributed to the fact that Roanoke, I was a first generation Roanokean.
Okay.
First generation. I come to Petersburg and get in and marry into a family,
mm-hmm.
that used to, my mother-in-law, she would say, there were no slaves on my mother's side. My mother's people, none of my mother's people were enslaved.
Mm-hmm.
My daddy, and she had that attitude, and mm-hmm. she said, as if they made themselves slaves.
Right.
So she said, and my daddy, he was ignorant. He left some part like Brunswick County or some county up there and was trying to get to New York, and he walked to Petersburg. He didn't know the difference from going north and going south. And she used to look down her nose at her own daddy. And I used to look at her.
What is that? Christopher Columbus had the same problem.
I know, but I look at her and I said, I love this lady, but this lady is crazy. You know, I told you about what she called me.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, I'm an immigrant. I never will forget that.
That is so funny.
I will never forget that. And I told you I wrote this paper, From Immigrant to Mayor.
From Immigrant to Mayor.
Mm-hmm. I did. I got to find that paper because that was neat. Y.T. Walker tried to get me to publish it.
You should have. Yeah. I was going to ask, was it ever published?
No,
If you find it, you should publish it.
Yeah, I got to find that paper. Because she was so funny. That immigrant is on the phone.
That immigrant.
Yeah, and she didn't care. She was a snotty lady. I loved her to death. I told you where we buried her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right there under those Tiffany windows. I fixed these white people in Petersburg. And when I did
that. And I love that she made sure that you got it.
Oh, she did. You do it. You do it. Because my children don't have the guts you got. They don't have the nerve you have. She loved me for my spirit.
Yes,
she really did. I guess she was one of the first people that did. No, I have to say my high school teachers did too.
The first people to do what?
Huh?
The first people to do what?
I said they loved me because of my spirit.
That's dope.
Mm-hmm. I think that made me grow, you know.
What made you what made you decide to run for mayor?
I didn't run for mayor.
Were elected because you were on city council.
I was on city council.
So what made you run? What made you be interested in city council?
I wasn't interested in city council. I got mad. I was angry.
Got you.
I was angry.
Good motivation.
I was angry. I was angry because of what was going on in Petersburg. The house I live in on Little Church Street. Mm-hmm. When I got married, my husband he had a business. Mm-hmm. He inherited from his daddy.
Okay.
His daddy had started that restaurant. His daddy had pool rooms. His daddy bought property, owned property all over Petersburg. Mm-hmm. And so he would be considered kind of a black wealthy person.
Okay.
In Petersburg, businessman and all, had a little... my mother-in-law, they were separated, but they reared their family close. My husband and his brother would have to, after school, go down and be with his daddy on the avenue.
Okay.
And but they lived with the mother on Hardin Street.
Okay.
And if she wanted them disciplined, she could call down to the funeral parlor and tell the people who ran the funeral parlor, the Wilkerson family, they were close, that the children, the boys had done something, then the daddy would spank them.
Okay.
So they reared their children together. Yes. Yeah, they had their system. But anyway, so that was something new for me too. I didn't know anything about people being divorced.
Yeah. Okay.
Or separated.
Okay.
You know, most of my friends had intact kind of families, so okay. I didn't know about that. So I was, you know, everything fascinated me that was different from what I knew.
Okay.
And so anyway, I thought that. But they were just kind of different. They were very different from, as I said, the people in Roanoke.
Mm-hmm.
And I started learning their habits, blending what they were with what I had, what mm-hmm. I brought to the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that was, I guess, again, there was people letting me be what I wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really have never been stifled, you know? And I don't think that that's something that a lot of kids have.
Yeah.
I didn't grow up in any kind of real restricted world, and mm-hmm. even in terms of the racial thing.
Okay.
I didn't know the kind of restrictions that the kids in Petersburg knew.
Okay.
And when I came down here to go to college, I met people from all these different places, you know, and all, and started realizing how different we were. And that we reflected, you know, where we had been reared.
Yeah.
And what we were about. And so, my childhood, as I said before, we lived in a segregated neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we learned that that's just the way the law was.
Okay.
And we accepted it that, which was different, as I said, from coming to Petersburg, where the people here experienced that it was because of what they were, that they were black people.
So your understanding was that it was a law set in place, and their understanding was
what?
That your understanding was that it was a law set in place, which was segregation. But their understanding was that it was a reflection of who they actually were.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a good way of saying it, and it makes a difference.
It does.
It makes a real difference.
Because one is the way you see yourself, your whole perception, yes. Your whole reality.
Yes. Yeah. See. And all, and we had a man in Roanoke. He was a dentist. His name was Harry Penn.
Mm-hmm.
He looked white.
Okay.
And so he used his whiteness, went to their meetings. They didn't know he was black.
Mm-hmm.
And he found out what they were doing and mm-hmm. all. We heard stories like that.
Okay.
And so he used his whiteness looking like them, mm-hmm. to get involved, to hear what they were doing, mm-hmm. and then he would come back to us, back to his people.
Okay.
And he would demand certain things for his people.
Okay.
So he would go to the school board and say that we want this in our curriculum. We want our children treated this way. So my public school education was rich.
That's lovely.
It was very different, mm-hmm. because it was separate, but the whole concept of separate but equal, that more or less prevailed kindly in Roanoke for a lot of things. Hmm. They had theirs and we had ours.
Okay.
And ours was not hand-me-downs.
Okay.
And ours was not considered second class.
Okay.
Hmm. Ours was not considered less than. So I grew up in a very different kind of world.
Let's see.
Hey guys, thanks so much for listening to this first part of the interview with Dr. Farley. I will be posting more of the interview in the next week or so. So stay tuned for that. And thanks again for listening to Somewhere in Between. Follow me.